This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, good Monday to you. Thanks for joining us this morning. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. We'll dive into the NFL in week number four. And we've got some news as well in college football because it was a bad day for Wisconsin and Colorado. Well, depending on how you look at it, they fired their two head coaches. It is a brand new world in college football. We knew this was coming, but they are two of five coaches that have already been fired before we really turn the calendar into October. We got a lot of NFL to get to. Started really early in the morning when they had the Saints and the Vikings out in London. And boy, you know what? For a game that doesn't show a lot of kicking, we had a lot of kicking in that particular game. But the early game saw Kenny Pickett make his debut for the Steelers. We've seen the Dallas Cowboys now go to 3-1. The New York Giants are 3-1. We've got a lot of players that had to leave the games due to concussions. No surprise, given that that was in the news all week long leading up into this weekend. But I think, we're at a point in the season, and I've been kind of waiting for this, where you're starting to see value in teams. It's very easy to see a team 1-0, 2-0, and you can start figuring out who you're playing. You may be looking good because your opponents stink. Teams are starting to find their legs. But you get to week four, you do have an idea of where teams are at. Now you're starting to really see, all right, we've had a number of games on our belt. This is a consistent thing that we're seeing from this football team. That's why I'm going to start with the Philadelphia Eagles. Beating the Jacksonville Jaguars, it wouldn't seem, if you were to go at the beginning of the season, like that would have been a big deal. Feels like even if the Eagles team that made the playoffs last year, even if they were a 2-1 team, you know, or a 1-2 team, that beating a Jacksonville Jaguars team would be in the cards if you were at home. But that's not exactly the weekend that we saw. We've seen Doug Peterson do some pretty good things in Jacksonville now. And we saw that Trevor Lawrence is starting to come his own as a quarterback. But what we're seeing from Philadelphia is a complete football team. Now, the rain came in. Trevor Lawrence couldn't hold on to the football. But the Eagles not only won the game, they won it in sloppy weather. And they won it against a good coached football team that they knew was well coached because many of them experienced being coached by him. But the Eagles are now 4-0. They run the ball. They play fantastic defense. And they've got a very good quarterback. 4-0 now. As you can look at a team, you can really start seeing the value rather than 2-0 and even maybe 3-0.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, diving into some games in the NFL from week number four yesterday. And a couple of them that, you know, really kind of stood out, I felt like some of them really made a statement, and some of them were still, we're doing it. We talked about the Eagles and the Jacksonville Jaguars, 29-21. I was kind of disappointed in Jacksonville. And even though this game was an 8-point game, and I thought Trevor Lawrence was abysmal. He lost four fumbles. He was sacked four times and completed 11 of 23 passes. And everyone was pointing out, but it was raining and it was wet. He plays in Jacksonville. He doesn't play in a dome. It rains there. He's a quarterback in the National Football League. They do wet ball drills all the time. It's not like it's a foreign substance that's coming out of the sky that only a place like Philadelphia has. And you're like, well, we only go there once every 4 years. Once every 8 years, we actually go to Philadelphia play. Why would that water that comes from the sky, why should we prepare for that on a regular basis? I was really shocked. There's a certain level where you have to say, we know what conditions we have to play in, and we have to get accustomed to them. Snow is one thing if you're a warm weather city. You can't prepare for snow. You can't prepare for cold. You just have to play through it. But wet weather is something that you can play through. You know it comes in Florida. You can prepare with wet balls. And he couldn't get a hold of it. He could not get a hold of it. Lost four fumbles. They didn't look particularly well. Got out of the gate early, had a 14-0 lead, but then the Eagles showed why they're one of the premier teams in the NFL right now at 4-0. Defensively, they were stout, and they, like I said, their quarterback's great, and they run the ball. Miles Sanders had 134 yards on the ground and two touchdowns. Hurts had a touchdown. They This is a really, really complete football team. And again, it's one of those situations that we talked about at the beginning of the season, and it held true through the first part of the year, which is they built a team around Jalen Hurts, and this allows Jalen Hurts to shine. Now, do I think Jacksonville showed us that they're the Jacksonville? No, I'm not going to go down that far. It's a bad game. It wasn't great weather. It's no excuse, but I still think this is a well-coached team and a good football team. Not a great football team, but a good football team. But it was a little disappointing that you get off to a good start, and then you sort of – it's not that you choke it away because the Eagles are good. They would have gotten back into this game. But you didn't certainly help your cause with four lost fumbles and an interception. It was just and getting sacked as much as he did. But there were some other games that I think had some value too. I mean, again, we're not talking about teams that got their first win like the Raiders or got to, you know, are falling to 1-3 and we never really thought anything of them. But I did think last night's game, Kansas City and Tampa Bay, was a bit really big deal. And I think it showed Kansas City bounced back nicely after losing to Indianapolis on the road, a game they weren't really particularly good at. But Tampa Bay, this was the surprising thing. It's not surprising that they lost to Kansas City. Kansas City's a better football team. Tampa Bay was allowing just 9 points a game. That's what they were giving up through three. And Kansas City put 41 on them as if they were missing 90% of their roster. And the Buccaneers are now 2-2, but they're struggling 2-2. Now, Brady had a pretty good game given that he had a mountain to climb after falling behind really early. And he ended up finishing with good numbers, but that doesn't really tell you the story of the way that game was, right? 385 with three touchdowns. But this was a Buccaneers team that hasn't looked really good this season, right? They didn't look good in a loss to Green Bay. They really didn't score. They didn't score their first touchdown in a week two game against the Saints until the fourth quarter. And they looked good against Dallas, but Dallas looked worse than they looked good. It was one of those games where you saw the deficiencies in one team more than anything that the winning team actually did. But one of the things that you could point to the Buccaneers, who were 2-1 going into yesterday's game, was their defense. It was the top defensive unit in terms of not allowing points. I mean, again, giving up just 9 a contest. Now, they were struggling to score a lot of points, but it was good enough to be a 2-1 team that didn't look on paper all that bad, lost to Green Bay by 2, you know, that kind of thing. But the Packers really, I mean, the Chiefs really dismantled them, And it's back to Patrick Mahomes being Patrick Mahomes. And that's one of the reasons this league is so fun to watch, because you can get a game like last week against Indianapolis where it didn't work out, but they were out of sync a bit, made some mistakes on special teams and the whatnot, and then you go to Tampa and you bounce back. It's a nationally televised game, and Patrick Mahomes is doing things where we say, oh, he's doing Patrick Mahomes stuff, but some of the stuff I was like still blown away by. That's the one thing about watching him play football. Is that you feel like you've seen everything, every little Harlem Globetrotter trick that he has, and then yet he does things and you go, oh my God, wow. But he's been doing that for years. He's been doing the flip passes as he's been getting sacked, or the run to right before the line of scrimmage and then flick it in the end zone to somebody who was once heavily covered but broke away for just a split second and he finds. He's been doing those things for a while. But yet every time he does do them, it's not such an amazement that we've seen it new. It's an amazement that we keep seeing it again and again. Right? And that was sort of the buzz last night. Yep, Brady and the Buccaneers have got a little bit of work to do. I know that people were really all in on this whole thing about Brady doesn't look like he's into this and whatnot. I think he looks into it. I think he's got a team that's got some flaws that they've got to fix. But I think he knows what he has. I mean, he's got a football team that's down a few wide receivers, down a few weapons. They didn't lose like they lost Gronk, but they didn't lose like what Aaron Rodgers has. Like Aaron Rodgers knows he's got to get his guys into the game. Like he's got to get his receivers on the same page as him. That's not the case with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and even a Julio Jones who they just brought in. Those guys, when they get healthy, or Evans was back yesterday from the one game suspension, those are some of the issues that he's got. But he knows he's got a good defense. But that defense has got to play a little bit better than last night. But how can you play better against a guy like Patrick Mahomes? You just hold on. You hold on for dear life when you play against him. But I think Brady understands the dynamics of the NFC. He knows his team is still, when it gets going, is one of the, you know, going to be one of the teams to beat when it comes to the Super Bowl. But I think Brady also knows that you let a few games go, you slide here, you slide there. How many times when you get to the podium did you say, we have to play better, we have to play better? Eventually, if you keep doing that, eventually you're going to be in a position where you're going to be like, well, where are we in the hierarchy? The problem is his division is not that good. The Atlanta Falcons might be the second best team in that division. They probably are the second best team in the division. And I thought the Atlanta Falcons were the worst team going into this year. But they play hard. They're a team that is rebuilding, but they're playing very, very hard. The Carolina Panthers are a mess. The New Orleans Saints are a mess, right? And the Packers know where they are in the pecking order of that division. So anybody that's saying, oh, Brady, don't be surprised if he quit. Why would he quit? Why would he quit? He's got a team that's going to the playoffs. I mean, just by the fact that the division's not that good. They don't have to be 13-4. They don't have to be 14-3. They can win that division with an 11-6 record, and he knows it. He just got to work through this. The marriage thing is the X factor. I get it. The marriage thing is always the X factor with him. But as far as losing his heart because he's suffered back-to-back losses and Mahomes sort of showed him up, I'm not buying that. I know people like to have fun on social media, but I'm not buying that. All right, we're going to get to some other games, but I do want to get into some news on college football because I do think it's important that Carl Durrell and Paul Christ both lost their jobs yesterday. It's only the fifth week in the college football season, and we've seen Herm Edwards lose his job, Jeff Collins lost his job, and Scott Frost lost his job. Five Power Five conference teams fired their coaches already this early in the season. And that's not really how the business of college football works, but for some reason now, it works this way. And I think we're going to get into why coming up. But when we come back, more on the NFL, including the debut of Kenny Pickett, and who the hell is Bailey Zappe? We'll talk about that as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Good Monday morning to you. All right, so Kenny Pickett, his era has started in Pittsburgh, and they lose to the Jets. Did you know that was the Jets' second win in Pittsburgh in franchise history?
Wow.
In franchise history.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, this is only the second time they have won in Pittsburgh. And they win 24-20 by putting up 14 points in the fourth quarter to erase a good lead that the Steelers had built up thanks to two Kenny Pickett runs after we replaced Mitch Trubisky. Look, we're all human, right? These guys aren't video game characters. They're robots. I wonder what Mitch Trubisky's night was like last night when he went home and just went, that's it. I'm over. It's over. I'm not unless he gets hurt, I'm not playing. I'm not playing for the Steelers anymore. I'm not their starting quarterback anymore. And that's it. He knew the deal going in. I mean, he knew the deal going in. He was going to have to win that job. And he didn't win the job. I'm sorry. You know what? You can blame Matt Canada, and I've blamed Matt Canada plenty of times. I think he's an awful play caller. But Mitch Trubisky was supposed to do something, right? Do something. He wasn't supposed to be pedestrian, and he had 3.5 games to do something, and he didn't. And he didn't. And everybody knows that when you draft a quarterback in the first round, he is going to be the guy. Now, if you take a guy in the fourth round, or fifth round, you may never see him. I mean, he might be on the roster because you liked him, and you just went, what the heck? We might need a quarterback down the road. A Dak Prescott, for example, when he got drafted, he wasn't going to be the heir apparent to Tony Romo. And the circumstances where Romo got hurt, Prescott came in, he did great, and that was it. Then the Prescott era begins. But when you draft a guy in the first round, or maybe even the second round, but really in the first round, he's supposed to take over. That's why Aaron Rodgers was so angry about Jordan Love. Because when you draft a guy in the first round, he's not to be the perennial backup until you retire. It's supposed to be knock, 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 look who's coming, somebody's right out the door, and you better get your act together. And so when the Steelers drafted Kenny Pickett, Mitch Trubisky knew what the deal was. If Mitch Trubisky was going to have that job and was going to keep Kenny Pickett at bay, that he was going to have to perform at a very high level. And he didn't. He didn't at all. And the play calling, again, was bad, and I get it, but That's the way it is. Offensive line wasn't that solid, whatnot. Especially when you draft a guy that's local, right? I mean, Kenny Pickett played his college football in that stadium, right? So he knows the city. He knows the fan base. The same fan base that rooted for him on Saturdays is now going to root for him on Sundays. So that's a tough situation for Mitch Trubisky to be in. So that being said, now that Kenny Pickett's in, that's it. It's his job. And that's the way Mike Tomlin has to play it. He can't do the dual quarterback thing. He can't. Kenny Pickett is going to struggle. He's going to go through the growing pains, but you can't pull him for Mitch Trubisky. You can't do that. And so, and you can't for Mason Rudolph too. So don't throw that in there as well. Pickett's going to have to grow on the job. Now, his final statistics against the Jets were 10 of 13 for 120, and the three incompletions, quote-unquote, that he had were interceptions. Now, the first interception was a long pass down. Claypool went up for it. Two defenders were next to him. He tipped it. It landed in a Jets' hand. That's interception. Second one was too high. The ball went up in the air, again tipped, and it landed in the arms of a Jet. And the third one was a Hail Mary at the end of the game, which is anybody's ball, and anybody could have pulled it down. Just happened a Jet pulled it down. And so those were the three interceptions. He did run for two touchdowns. The offense looked better under Kenny Pickett. They should be ashamed of themselves that they blew that game, as the Jets had two good drives down the field to get touchdowns. One was set up by the interception. But, I mean, 11 plays and 10 plays, those were the two drives that the Jets used in the fourth quarter, especially the one at the end where they got the two-yard touchdown run, and then they had to set up the Hail Mary. But the Steelers now dropped to 1-3. But as a Steeler fan, I don't care, because I wanted the Kenny Pickett era to start, and I wanted to get this over with so that he now becomes more seasoned in this league, and then the full Kenny Pickett career begins if he's going to be a legitimately good quarterback. But as an analyst, as a guy that's, you know, coming at it and trying to come in at it with a neutral frame, this is going to be hard for the Pittsburgh fans to deal with, because this team might actually have a losing season when it's all said and done. And it's very likely that they will. Now, maybe they won't. Maybe Pickett will surprise people and win some games. But when a Ben Roethlisberger, who takes over from the team in week two and doesn't lose again until the AFC Championship game, that is so rare. But that team was really, really built well around him. Had a stellar defense, really good weapons around him. He was a young quarterback. He made mistakes, but the mistakes were sort of, you could make up for it. They had such a good defense that if Roethlisberger did make a mistake, the defense was like, don't worry about it, we got it. This is a defense without T.J. Watt. They make a lot of mistakes. They lost a couple players to various injuries this year already. So they're likely to have a losing season. And I know that everyone's going to come after Tomlin, but that's a spoiled look at Tomlin's career. To have a guy that got into this league in 2007 and has not ever had a losing season, and then for him to have one season where he's going to start a rookie quarterback, his defensive player of the year is hurt, and he might have a losing season, and everyone's like, oh, Tomlin, it's time to stop. Relax. Everybody chill for just 2 seconds on this. You know, the other thing, too, is this is one of the things that drives me crazy. And listen, firing the coach is as a fan's right to say that as anything. And it's part of the territory. And I'm not going to take that away from fans. You can want to fire your coach for any reason. I don't care. But that's part of the joy of being a passionate fan, and sometimes you get a little irrational at times. But who do you want that you're legitimately going to get? Right? A guy, you want to fire a guy that has never had a losing season. For who? For who? Sean Payton? He's not coming. He's waiting for Mike McCarthy to get fired. For who? It's the same thing in the college game. We're going to get to that coming up, with the firings of five coaches already in college football. Already. Again, we just turned the calendar to October. Five guys lost their job. And none of them had a scandal. None of them because they mistreated a player, or they had, you know, racist language, or, you know, were caught on tape saying things to a female employee or anything like that. None of them, nothing scandalous. It was because somebody got in the ear of somebody. We'll talk about that coming up as well. But the Steelers, the Kenny Pickett era now has begun. I thought he looked pretty good.
He looked like a rookie.
Yeah, of course.
He made rookie mistakes, but at the same time, I think there's promise there.
Yeah, I do too. I think it was fine.
I just want Tomlin to commit.
There's one game yet. Yeah, I know.
But he better never go back to Mitch Trubisky. He can't do that to Pickett. It has to be Pickett's job, because part of the growth of a quarterback in this league is part of this growth is now it's yours. So now you're in, even though you're in the quarterbacks meeting anyway, you're now QB1, right? You're the guy. You're the guy. You're taking all the first team reps now. You're the leader of this team. So you have to go through the week of that. So his life now has changed. His job, when he goes in for work, his job is now completely changed. So, well, you've got to let him develop that. By the way, the question we'd asked before the break, who the hell is Bailey Zappi, right? He's the kid from Western Kentucky. What's a Bailey Zappi? He's the third-round quarterback for the Patriots that ended up seeing playing time because Mac Jones is hurt and Brian Hoyer left with a concussion. And all of a sudden, Bailey Zappi's throwing a touchdown pass, though the Patriots lost in overtime to the Green Bay Packers. What is going on with the Green Bay Packers? And don't give me the Devontae Adams answer, but they are struggling to score points.
Yeah.
Like, they are – this was a 27-24 game in overtime that went the full overtime. Like, at the buzzer, they knocked this one through. They cannot do this. Aaron Rodgers said it best. We cannot win games like this.
No, I mean, even when you look at it on paper, I mean, it's Aaron Rodgers versus Bailey Zappi.
Bailey
Zappi's going toe to toe.
What was great about it is that's what he said that at the end of the game. He's like, look, they played well, they did things, but we can't be in overtime to a third string quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, we can't. Like, we cannot be losing, you know? He's like, it doesn't take anything away from the joy of winning, but we, you know, this is one we had to have, but they've got to play better. He's got to play better. I mean, that was a 10-7 deficit at halftime. And, you know, he had a pick six in that mix. And so he knows this too. But again, you get a third string rookie in there at Lambeau Field and you're going to overtime. I know it's a well-coached team, Bill Bell, all of that, but still, Aaron Rodgers is 100% correct. There are opportunities that you've got to take advantage of, and when the third-string QB is coming in, and that third-string QB is a rookie, not some veteran that you know can play, but just circumstances are that he's the third guy on the totem pole, you've got to win that game going away. They were a 9.5 favorite in that game. And I actually put a little money on the Packers to cover that spread because I thought Brian Hoyer was terrible. And when he was out of the game, I didn't even know who Bailey Zappi was. And he played like an hour and a half up the road from me at Western Kentucky. It's like, I'm not following Hilltopper football enough, I guess.
Nah, you know what? Get on it.
Get on.
They're
it,
producing quarterbacks, Tony.
Yeah, they must be. They must be. So. Yeah, that's one of those games where you're like, I don't know. But again, look at their division, right? I mean, look at their division. The Lions are scoring a zillion points a game, but they're giving up a zillion points a game, right? Minnesota is kicking into high gear a little bit, but still. And the Chicago Bears lose again where their quarterback, and they don't have a passing game. They have a running game, but they don't have a passing game. So Aaron Rodgers is in the same boat. Aaron Rodgers is like Tom Brady. They have some problems. They're trying to fix problems that they have. You know, again, I get losing Gronk in Tampa Bay. It's a security blanket for a long time. That's a guy you're really comfortable with. But, and the injuries to Godwin and Julio Jones have affected the passing game. The suspension of Mike Evans didn't help in that game against Green Bay, but he is back. And losing Devontae Adams is a problem. But you've got to fix that problem. It's not like Devontae Adams was hurt. Like, he's been gone for a while. You had a whole offseason to figure it out. You had a whole offseason to get everybody up to speed a little bit. Look, I'm not saying that Christian Watson or anybody else or Alan Lazard or anybody else is supposed to replace Devontae. You can't replace a Pro Bowl. That's why they're a Pro Bowler. That's sort of the rule. But you have to be able to then adjust without him, not look completely lost without him. And that's one of the reasons that feel like with the Packers, it's like, hey, losing Devontae Adams is a big deal, but at the same time, let's figure out a way so it's not a big deal. So we're not in an overtime game against the Patriots with their third-string quarterback. All right, I want to get to the college football story. I think it's a really, really big deal. It's a changing landscape. We're going to talk about Paul Chryst losing his job, Carl Durrell losing his job, as well as the three others before, and we have only played 5 weeks of college football. It's coming up as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We'll be right back.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Robert on Facebook, losing Adams is a huge part of the problem. He and Rodgers were very good together. He was lost and replaced with, yeah, again, we get it. Losing Devontae Adams is a big deal. I'm not doing the Captain Obvious game. Of course losing Devontae Adams is a problem. Yeah, it is. But he's Aaron Rodgers, for crying out loud, and that's Matt LaFleur, and they're both offensively smart, and they've got to figure it out. I'm not asking the Green Bay Packers to look exactly the same without Devontae Adams. What I am asking is take the tools you have and then figure out how to be better with it. You still have Aaron Rodgers on that football team. So, yeah, I'm not dismissing Devontae Adams by any means. It's silly. But at the same time, they aren't winning. That's a... For the love of Pete, do not tell me that going to overtime with the New England Patriots with a third-string quarterback is exactly what should have taken place at Lambeau Field because they don't have Devontae Adams. That's silly. Aaron Rodgers knows that's silly. That's ridiculous. That's just a stupid excuse. The Patriots are a good team. They're not a great team. They're a good team. But Bailey Zappi shouldn't be throwing touchdown passes, and that game should be nowhere even close to overtime with Brian Hoyer or anybody else on the field. Losing Devontae Adams is a big deal, but that's not the reason why they went into overtime against a shorthanded New England Patriots team. That's not the reason. They have got to call better plays. They have got to get better people involved. They have got to figure out other things because you can lose players all the time, right? And yeah, I get it. I mean, don't get me wrong. Brady is doing the same thing where, you know, hey, you feel like the Buccaneers would be a little better if they had Gronk, a different kind of player, a different more comfortable player. But quarterbacks that get comfortable with receivers, Brady has been comfortable with receivers all throughout his career. Rodgers is the same way. He's been comfortable with different receivers all through his career. These guys didn't become Pro Bowl quarterbacks. They didn't become excellent quarterbacks because there was one guy that they were attached to. Because there were multiple guys through their careers that they were attached to. Different circumstances, different coaching. But there's no way the Packers at all should be anywhere near an overtime game with the Patriots. And to be honest with you, even going down to Tampa, that was a 14-12 victory. And that was a little disappointing, to be honest with you, because we thought, hey, Rodgers and Brady, yay. And it ended up being kind of a dull offensive series. They know it. I mean, Rodgers had a halftime passer rating of 11.2. Terrible. That's the lowest he's ever had, right? He threw a pick six in that game. He's throwing off target. The obvious answer is, of course, that's not insight, but you have to see teams be able to adjust because of that. Like I said earlier, they didn't lose Devontae Adams to an injury last week. If that was the case, then I'd say, yeah, they had a week to prepare without a weapon. He left and they had a whole off season to figure it out, a whole training camp to figure it out, a whole first three games of the season to figure it out. That's plenty of time to figure it out. And maybe it looks a little different, but an overtime win against the Patriots, all of overtime, they couldn't wrap that up in the second half, down 10-7 to Bailey Zappi. Forget it. All right, Paul Christ at Wisconsin lost his job. He's the fifth Power 5 conference coach to lose his job. And if you're on your scoreboard tab, Scott Frost in Nebraska, Herm Edwards at Arizona State, Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech, Carl Durrell also got fired this weekend out of Colorado, and now Paul Christ at Wisconsin. Welcome to the new world of college football, right? College football has a problem in that its calendar is all messed up, right? The calendar is messed up in this regard. There used to be signing day in February, so you have to get on the recruiting trail. And now there is an early signing period in December that's as big as signing day is in February. And so schools panic. They panic because they've got a coach. The coach is struggling. You may not want to keep him around anymore. There's a buzz within your boosters. There's a buzz within your program that this may not be the guy. And then you better you fire him so then you can start looking for a coach, so then you can announce a coach, so then they can get started on the recruiting trail to take advantage of the early signing period. And what that means is that coaches are going to start getting fired more and more earlier into the season, which is really too bad because, again, even though NIL has come in and sort of made the professionalism of amateur sports, the reality of it is that this loses the cohesiveness of in the end, what this is supposed to be kind of all about. You know, kids are choosing these programs and they're going to these schools and then the coach is being fired quickly. And then all of a sudden, everything that you're preaching about college athletics, you're not really enacting. Now, pull yourself back for a second like I'm doing, okay? I see the business side of this. So, of course, if you've got an 0-5 Colorado coach and he's not doing the job, why wait? Scott Frost should have been fired at the end of last season. He wasn't. They gave him one more chance. It was off to a terrible start. You cut ties with them and get going with someone else. Wisconsin has had pretty good seasons under Paul Christ, but they're off to a 2-3 start, and they were embarrassed against Illinois. And all of a sudden now, a guy that grew up in Madison, his father coached there, he went to school there, his assistant coach there, he's a head coach there, and now he's done. He's done with the school. And because these schools all have piles and piles and piles of money, and it's not anybody's money. That's the other key. It's not anybody's money. It's the school's money. So it doesn't belong to anybody. You're seeing a more willingness to go, yeah, go pay him out, whatever that costs. Remember when Scott Frost got let go? And they were like, well, if they just wait until this day, they can save $7.5 million. Why save $7.5 million? It's just going to come in through other areas, and it's not anybody's money. And that's kind of the difference in professional sports. Right? In professional sports, it's somebody's money. So they don't like giving money out to failures who then just get to cash a big fat check of their money. They go, oh no, you stick around for a little bit. Now, don't be wrong. Some coaches don't mind writing that check. But sometimes you see his contract is up. It's not going to get renewed. That kind of thing. But in college sports, nope. Why not? Why save a dime? Who's going to yell at us for saving $7.5 million in the football program? Who's going to come after us? All the boosters want this guy gone today. Who's going to fire us because we didn't save the $7.5 million keeping a coach around? But this is the new way the sport is going to start doing business. You're going to see more and more and more of this. Whereas a school was more willing to keep a guy to the very end and then let him go on that last play of that last game, you could see it a lot, right? Like Brett Bielema, when he was let go at Arkansas, was told like right after the game, yeah, that's it. Same thing. But there's this new, I've been wondering, and I'll probably need like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years down the road to sort of figure this out. But I'm really curious how much the boosters who used to have some influence and now have a greater influence because they're providing the NIL deals to the athletes, how much more of a voice they have in this process. They've always had a voice. But how much more pressure are they coming under? Right? Because I've been saying this for a long time with NIL, right? When you had under the table payments, so you'd have a booster come in and go, hey man, I'm going to give this guy $10,000 under the table or whatever it may be. Everybody was hush hush, right? If you knew about it, you didn't want to know about it, and you tried to keep it from people so that they didn't know about it, so they could deny it and have plausible deniability when they denied it. Everything was under the table, everything was hidden, and everything was quiet. So a booster wouldn't come out publicly and say, hey man, I've been given $50,000 a year to this program and under the table payments, they owe me to fire the coach. Because he wouldn't say that because it would get the school in trouble. It'd put the school on probation and you're hurting your cause that you're trying to fight for in the first place. But now with NIL and things are open, these are real business contracts. These are real expectations. And when expectations aren't met, right, contracts get canceled and contracts, you know, business deals get sort of blown up. And also people have a right to be angry. If I pay a player X amount of dollars to be a spokesman for my company and that player's not playing or the team stinks and he's the reason why and the coach isn't doing his job playing that particular player, I might have a more vocal voice within the school. hey, you told me Scott Jones was going to be the starting quarterback. We signed him to a $100,000 NIL deal that I got to give him, and now he's not playing anymore. And by the way, we're 0-4, or we're 1-3. And so now it's more out in the open. Now that person can come out publicly and say something to the school and go, this isn't under the table. These are real contracts. This is real money. And I get it. All of these things have a risk. I could hire a Hollywood actor and he could get arrested and then I lose out. But we're talking about a football program that I'm heavily invested in. And I'd like a bigger seat at the table since I'm helping this process along. Believe me, schools don't want to pay the kids a nickel, and they don't have to pay the kids a nickel. They're not supposed to pay the kids a nickel. All NIL deals have to come from a third-party agency. But now how much power does that third-party agency have? Are we going to start seeing more of this based on their voice? Paul Chryst is a good guy, grows good, you know, is a good coach. This season hasn't gone their way, but when you lose in tough loss, big loss to Ohio State, excusable, but at home to Illinois, not excusable. There's going to be a rumblings about where exactly we are in this. Jeff Collins hasn't done anything at Georgia Tech. He got a huge payday. Scott Frost got a huge payday. Herm Edwards is getting a huge payday. And Carl Durrell will get a huge payday. That's part of the deal. Right? It's one of the best jobs in the country. You know, I was thinking about Paul Chryst this morning. I was thinking, wow, a guy that grew up in Madison. His father was a coach there. He became a coach there. He was a student there. Now he's the head coach of his school. Right? To be told, to be sat down in a room and be told, you're done. We're letting you go. Thanks for everything. We appreciate it. But this is where we part company. And your whole life, everything that you've been attached to, your whole life has been severed. Even though they say he's going to get $19 million. We'll see what the final figure is amount. That's a lot of money. But I started thinking, boy, that must be a really hard thing to take. Right? Now, remember something. People are like, well, it's a lot of money. I'd feel happy. Yeah, you'd feel happy. But in the end, you had money. Like what did $19 million do to your life that you weren't already doing? You had millions of dollars anyway. You probably had the house. You probably took any vacation you wanted. You probably drove whatever car you wanted. You know, you could donate to any charity you wanted. $19 million's a lot, but you weren't making 30 grand a year. And then you got $19 million, right? You were making millions of dollars and now you get $19 million. But that loss of my connection to this school is done. It's done. And I kind of felt bad for him. But this is the new business of college football, and you better be keeping up. And plus, when there are candidates out there that you need to make a run at, when there are hot commodities out there that you know you could make a run at, you got to get rid of the guy you currently am. Because you know that you could make it, like Nebraska. Nebraska is going to be making some run at some names. And they had to get rid of Scott Frost in order to do that. Get an interim coach in there. All right, we'll talk more about the NFL coming up as we continue after week number 4. Again, concludes tonight a rematch of the NFC Championship game between the Rams and the Niners. But we got more games to dive into. Again, your thoughts on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. We'll get back into, again, the NFL. Real quick on Paul Chryst, 720 winning percentage. I've said this for years, and I really hope administrators hear me out. I get it that there's an attachment that you have to people that went to your school. I used to say all the time, I mean, I'm so tired of people saying, we have to hire this person because he gets us. Nobody's different. Nobody's unique. No. Everyone likes to think they're special because it's this way. Like I went to this school and nobody understands us. Like that's all junk. That's nonsense. Bring in the best candidate you can. I don't care if he's never lived in your state. He never went to your school. He has nothing attached to your school. His kid didn't go to your school. His father wasn't an assistant coach there at one point. If he's the best candidate, bring him on board. Bring him on board. That's the best way to do it. Steve Spurrier is the best coach South Carolina's ever had. He was nowhere near that program. And then he went there and was like the best coach they've ever had. Yeah, I know sometimes a guy works out because he was the alma mater and all that. But a lot of times it doesn't, and then you get the sentimentality. Oh, he's one of us. He's not one of you. He's just a guy doing a job. And if you don't like the way he does the job, you fire him. And that's the way it is. You have to let him go. If you feel like you can do better, the name of the game is to do better. Do better. And don't worry about attaching. I mean, I saw this in Colorado. Colorado did that. John Embry was – they hired John Embry, this guy. He's a buff. He understands. He stunk. He was absolutely terrible. Terrible coach, right? Carl Durrell came in from UCLA. He just got let go after 2.5 seasons. One of the years, it was COVID short. They went 4-2 in a COVID short football season in the Pac-12. He was coach of the year. And then 2 years later, atrocious. He's 0-5. Yeah. And sometimes you have to look yourself in the mirror when you fire a coach. Did we give this coach everything possible? Did we give him all the best recruiting tools? Colorado has terrible practice facilities. Terrible facilities. They're getting better. They're trying to get better. But when kids go on campus and they see antiquated practice facilities and then they go to another place and it's like state-of-the-art everything, push-button stuff, and a locker room that has a video game system in it and whatever else they could possibly throw in, it's very, very hard to compete. It's like, yeah, we like to do things old school with, sandbags. And you're like, no, thank you. I appreciate it, but no, thank you. You got a leak over there and your roof is kind of disgusting. And the showers, there's only like 3 of them. Yeah, you gotta upgrade your facilities. All right, more on the NFL as we continue. It is Wake Up Call. Thanks for joining us on a Monday. What a wild weekend full of stuff, including baseball. We got to get all to that as we roll along here on Sports Map Radio.